Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you live in the Kia studios going until 7 o'clock this evening when we will turn things over to LSU and Texas A&M. Feels like the one big ranked team against ranked team, at least higher up, matchup going on today. We had another ranked, it was Navy and Notre Dame. We'll talk about all of these college football games and our college football catch-up coming up in about 17 minutes from now. However, going to go out to the waitfor.com hotline and bring in my friend, David Sheely, who works for 10 Tampa Bay, WTSP down there in the Tampa area, does an incredible job as a sports broadcaster. David, how you doing on the Saturday, man?
What's up, my friend? Good to hear from you.
Absolutely. It's fun because, and David, I don't know how much you tell the people down in Tampa. It's your business whether or not. But at least up here, I can say that David's a Falcons fan in Buccaneers territory. So he covers the Buccaneers. But at heart, the man's a Falcons fan. So it's fun to get to kind of have this type of a conversation with you of trying to figure out what we're going to see. But first, David, I have to ask you, did you see this Uncrustable story in the NFL this week?
No, I have no idea what that is.
All right, I'm so glad because I'm about to potentially blow your mind with this.
Okay.
All right, the NFL, the Athletic did the story. The Athletic revealed this week that the NFL consumes an estimated 800,000 Uncrustables sandwiches every season. All right, they have broken this down to the Denver Broncos consume 700 Uncrustables a week. The Falcons are in fifth place with 250 a week. So that for the Broncos would be about 11 per player per week, and for the Falcons it's about 4. Still seems like an incredibly high rate. Do you have anything that you're like that obsessed with when it comes to a snack? And I'm just like curious how you take the NFL being so obsessed with Uncrustables.
Well, I don't think there's any snack that I consume to that level. But what I can say is, you know, for an NFL player, you know, you got to bulk, right? So
sure.
you got to up the calorie count, up the protein count. And so that's always a good quick hit of protein and carbs, you know, just real quick. So I'm not super surprised by that. I also, you know, have essentially confirmed that halftime adjustments are a myth. So I wouldn't be shocked to find out that Uncrustables are being consumed like Squidward in the Krabby Patty vault. Like, I'm pretty sure that's what it looks like at halftime of an NFL locker room. And it's not actually just like a whole strategy meeting for 15 minutes, you know?
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe the real story here is it's the Uncrustables that are providing the second half adjustments because they got more energy. I don't know what it is. But David, when it comes to Sunday's matchup with the Falcons and the Bucks, feels like a lot is on the line just simply for what's going to happen to the future of the NFC South, because a win for the Falcons creates a pretty massive gap for whether it is going to be Tampa Bay or whether it's going to be New Orleans to try to win this division. How does Baker attack this Falcons defense without Mike Evans and without Chris Godwin?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily on Baker to attack. Speaking on Baker, I think for him, the best thing to do is not try to force anything. Live the play, the next play, check it down if you need to. Don't try to force any downfield shot. I think the best way for Tampa Bay to attack, not just the Falcons, but any defense going forward, is going to be through their rushing attack. Mm-hmm. If anybody saw their game against New Orleans a couple of weeks ago, they ran the ball all over that Saints team in New Orleans, and they have three legitimate rushing threats with Rashad White, and then they have Sean Tucker, and then they have Bucky Irving, who is questionable to play, but the Bucs are leaning towards him playing with a toe injury. And so when you have three really good running backs, I think you have a chance to truly establish a ground attack that forces a defense to lean a little bit forward, and then you can probably hit them with some play action and go over their heads. And that's when it doesn't really matter who you have at receiver, because you have a defense that's too worried about the running game. So that's probably my game plan. Now, the buzzword throughout One Buck Place this week has been creative. That's it. Everybody knows Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator, built an offense that was totally tailored to getting Mike Evans and Chris Godwin the football.
Sure.
And now that they're not here, he's having to be creative in order to find ways to get Sterling Shepard and Jalen McMillan, the rookie, and Trey Palmer, a second-year receiver, the football. And so we'll see how creative they really get. Obviously, you can't run trick plays for an entire NFL game. But I do expect the Bucs to come out and hit some stuff that are totally off tendency that will work, or it won't, you know, simply put.
The league hasn't seen the triple option in a while. I don't know if Baker could be the one to roll out there with it, but it's interesting. You say that creative, and it makes me think, what kind of trick plays are we going to see getting pulled out with an offensive lineman or whatever might be the case? But it's certainly things are stacked against Baker just from that standpoint, just because, I mean, losing Mike Evans or Chris Godwin is bad enough, but both of them feels like a really tough situation. But talking with David Shealy of WTSP 10 Tampa Bay on the waitfor.com hotline. David, we remember what happened this last time these two teams got together. Pretty improbable win for the Falcons, the way that they were able to pull that one out in overtime with Kadarius Hodge. But outside of the receivers who are going to be missing, how do you see this matchup being different just based on what Tampa learned from this last time?
Well, Tampa's going to look a little bit different on offense and defense. So what they're missing on offense is obvious when you don't have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. But defensively, they are getting back the highest-paid safety in the league, Antoine Winfield Jr. He did not play on Thursday night. But there's going to be two defenders that they will not have. Jamel Dean, their starting cornerback, he's not going to be able to play. He's on short-term IR right now. And also the former Georgia Bulldog, Go Dogs, Tyquee Smith. He led Tampa Bay in tackles on that Thursday night with 11. He is out with a concussion this week. So you have two guys that are typically starting that you won't have in the secondary, but you do have Antoine Winfield Jr., who was an all-pro last year. So, that kind of evens out maybe. But the biggest concern really needs to be at cornerback, because you have Zion McCollum, who is now your number one corner. He's going to be on Drake London. To me, that's a bit of a mismatch, especially because we know Drake London, especially on those short routes, really, he can win those one-on-one battles, and Zion McCollum struggles with those one-on-one battles at times. Sometimes he just completely falls for a double move and blows his assignment. And on the other side, whoever's going to be guarding Mooney or Ray-Ray, it's either going to be Christian Izian, who was an undrafted rookie last year, or it's going to be Tyreek Funderburk, who was an undrafted rookie this year. So that's my concern defensively for Tampa Bay. And then, of course, on offense, if they get down, a lot of pressure is going to be put on them. Atlanta's game plan should very clearly and obviously be make Tampa Bay one-dimensional and make them have to beat you with their wide receivers.
Yeah, I guess kind of piggybacking off that thought, like, do you see a situation in which, with this last game being a 36-30 kind of finish, do you think Tampa Bay can hang with a high-scoring type of game, or do you think they need to keep this pretty low-scoring?
Yeah, it's going to have to be a low-scoring and dirty type of football game, dare I say boring type of football game, because sure. We know how football fans are these days. If the final score is in 45-42, they get upset.
Yeah.
So I really think if Tampa Bay is going to win this game, they're going to have to win it like 14-10. It's going to have to be one of those type of games. And to be honest, that defense needs one of those type of games. They've given up 500 yards twice in the last three contests, and, of course, one of those was on Thursday night against the Falcons. They just gave up 500-plus to the Ravens on Monday night. So that defense needs a game that gets people saying, okay, cool, like everything's fine, don't hit the panic button yet. Because Todd Bowles, the head coach, he's a defensive-minded guy. He's the defensive play caller.
Sure.
And you're telling me with an all-pro at safety, another pro bowler, and possibly future Hall of Famer, a linebacker in Levante David. They have first and second round picks in the trenches. You're telling me they're giving up 500 yards? That's a problem.
Yeah. David, what's your confidence level? What have you seen lately out of the offensive line? Because it feels like that's going to be a point for Atlanta, who, look, all they've heard all week and all the media feels like has been discussing is pass rush has not been there for the Falcons this year. And so it feels like there is a point to be proven this week. But how likely do you think that's going to happen given the way that Tampa's offensive line has played as of late?
Yeah, the offensive line had some injury issues earlier in the season. They didn't have their right tackle, Luke Getteke, for a few weeks. They were able to get him back. They didn't have center Graham Barton, their first-round pick this year. He missed the game. But as of now, it looks like everybody's good. Everybody's going to be able to play. And they don't give up a lot of sacks when they're fully healthy. The offensive line is actually pretty good. That is not an area of concern down here in Tampa Bay. I don't foresee Atlanta having one of those 5-6 sack type of days. They might be able to get a couple of coverage sacks because, again, you're talking about wide receivers who are not Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. And so if Tampa Bay wants to call one of those plays with these long developing routes, it might lead to a coverage sack because Atlanta has it so well bracketed and covered that Baker has no clue where to go. Sometimes he refuses to check it down, which has been his downfall, and then he'll end up taking a sack. That's how I kind of foresee Atlanta maybe getting one or two sacks.
All right, creamsicle uniforms coming out on Sunday for the Bucs. I feel like if you were to put up the creamsicle uniforms versus Atlanta's throwbacks with the red hats, you've got two of the best throwback uniforms in the league. Maybe you could throw the Broncos throwbacks amongst that conversation as well. Are you in favor of the creamsicle? You like those, or is that not really your thing?
They look good. They look good. Here's the problem, and some fans down here are kind of split.
Okay.
They believe the jerseys are cursed.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They believe the jerseys are cursed. Get this. Tampa Bay, in the history of wearing the creamsicle, right, as either their main uniform or their throwback uniform, they have like 100 odd wins and like 200 plus losses in that uniform. And primarily as a throwback, when they brought him back in 2009, they beat the Packers in 2009, but then they lost to Carolina, they lost to Atlanta, and they lost to New Orleans in the following 3 years during their creamsicle games. They decided to bring the creamsicle back last year. They got blasted by the Lions, and now here they are bringing them back again against Atlanta. So the history in the creamsicles and the record in the creamsicles is not good. The players, they don't believe in any curse. They're like, sure, whatever. And if it was up to them, they would be wearing these more than once a year, but you only get one creamsicle game a year because fans already have an issue with it because they feel like if we're putting them on, we're going to look good, but we're going to play bad.
That's the breaking news of the day from David Chealy, is that the creamsicle uniforms could be cursed, and hey, maybe that'll help the Falcons out on Sunday. I don't know, for whatever reason, David, Josh Freeman is the person that comes to my mind when I think of the creamsicle uniforms being brought back, which is just like, that maybe that fits the creamsicle pretty perfectly, because not a great memory for a lot of Tampa Bay fans to think of Josh Freeman. But I just remember when they brought them back, whatever, maybe it was 2009 or just around that era, that he was so terrible for them and a part of that. But that's interesting. I had no idea there was so much negative history attached to the jerseys, and then they bring them out for an NFC South matchup. That's one to keep an eye on. That is David Chealy, WTSP 10 Tampa Bay. David, appreciate you giving us some of your time on the Saturday, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it as always, man. Good to hear from you.
All right, when we get back, going to do a college football catch-up. No dogs going on today. Next week, Georgia-Florida. But there's still some interesting matchups going on and some yet to be played. We'll talk about it next right here on the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.